97.5 The Fanatic.
On a pleasant Sunday morning to you and yours. Hope you guys are staying safe, healthy, and happy. 6 a.m. here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Thank you so much for joining us. Just taking a little part of your day to enjoy our program today. I'm Tyler Zoli. We're here until 8 o'clock today. Connor Thomas producing the show. You'll hear from him as well throughout the program. We've got a lot to discuss and only 2 hours to do it, so let's jump right into things. I hate to be overstating anything here, but the Philadelphia 76ers are the greatest team in the history of the NBA. It's a joke, of course. A little 6 a.m. humor. Because Connor Thomas, who is producing the show today, loves making statements such as that, and you can find that on his Twitter, so it's not like I'm throwing him under the bus here. He makes statements like that all the time. However, I will say this. If you right now, and I'm about to set all of your phones off, if you have an Apple product, if you go, hey Siri, who's the best team in the NBA? Siri will respond to you, the Philadelphia 76ers. You know why? Because they're 5-1. Another dominating performance last night by the Sixers in a rout victory, a 127-112 victory over the Charlotte Hornets. And yeah, this was a 15-point game. It never even felt that close. And I know I talked about this a little bit last Sunday when I was on the air, this time last Sunday, so just about a week ago today. But there's something different. I think there's multiple somethings different about this team. But the one thing that I find the most imperative about this team, the most important about this team that's different from a season ago, is that there are times within the game that the Sixers' lead shrinks from, let's say, take 15, for example. They won by 15 last night, so let's take 15 for a nice round number. There are times within the game where the Sixers' lead shrinks from 15 to 8 or 9. And last year, when that happened, the lead shrinking from 15 to 8 or 9 was catastrophic. Because the entire flow of the game changed almost immediately. And that 15 then went to 8 or 9, and then that 8 or 9 went to 3 or 4. And all of a sudden, Brett Brown was using two timeouts in the span of 4 minutes because this team had totally lost its edge. Now, for the second time in two games, I watched, well, the second time in three games, really, because the Toronto game was in between. But for the second time in three games, I watched the Sixers have comfortable leads, jump out to comfortable leads. And even when the Hornets went on little runs and cut the lead from 15 to 9, the Sixers immediately then put the lead back to 12 or 13. And I'm sitting there watching the game yesterday, and I had to comment on the fact that even when those little Hornets runs were happening, I felt comfortable. I felt like from midway through the first quarter on, this game was what you would call a rocking chair game, meaning that you sit back in your rocking chair and you just enjoy the view. Because at no point, even when the lead shrunk to single digits at one point, did I feel like the Sixers had lost control of this game. Now, you could talk to coaching for that. You could talk to the fact that they were lights out from beyond the arc yesterday. You could talk to the fact that their spacing has been significantly better. And to all of those, I say correct. Because there is not one particular thing that I'm going to sit here and say, this is the definitive reason as to why the Sixers are better this year than they were last year, because that would be selling this team short. I'm also cognizant of the fact that they have 66 games left to play, and the bulk of the front end of the schedule has been significantly easier than we'd expected it to be. Meaning that Toronto is 1-4. Washington, a team that maybe we thought could be a playoff team, is 1-5. They played Charlotte. They lost to Cleveland, who, yes, they are 4-2, but they're still, in my opinion, not a very good basketball team. They beat the Orlando Magic, who were 4-0 at the time, but now have lost consecutive games. So, sure, you could say that the schedule has favored the Sixers, and it's true. But what I've seen from this team over the course of the first six games maybe sans the Cleveland game, because that was just a disaster. There are so many things that I could point out about this Philadelphia 76ers team that I could say has improved from a season ago. The roster was, I don't want to use the word overhauled, because I don't think they were overhauled, because the to overhaul a roster, you are getting rid of the guys that were the key pieces a year ago. The key pieces are still the key pieces. It's still Joel Embiid. It's still Ben Simmons. It's still Tobias Harris. Now you fill out the rest of the roles however you'd like, with Danny Green, with Seth Curry, Shake Milton having another season of experience under his belt. And then you kind of fill out the bench as it is. But what I've seen from this team compared to last year has been, let me say this, it's felt like it's been an overhaul. While the roster hasn't been, quote, overhauled, it sure feels like it has. So I want to open up the show today by asking you a very simple question. And it's not complex. It's not something that I think that you are going to have to dig too deep to find the answer for. But there's multiple options that you could come away with an answer with. So what I want to ask you today to start the show off, and we are going to talk Eagles, and I have to talk about the awful, awful state of the college football playoff. We'll get into all of that, you know, throughout the next 2 hours. But I have to start the show off today by simply asking, what is the biggest difference for this Sixers team? Because like I said, there's not one right answer. There's not one wrong answer. I think there's a myriad of answers that you could go with to come up with why the fact the Sixers are 5-1, and despite the fact that last year they were also 5-0 to start the season, and 5-1 for that matter after six games, this just seems and feels and looks different. Now, Connor Thomas, we'll get to your answer in just 1 second, but I'm going to give you mine to start the show off. What has been the most striking difference between this year and last year for this Philadelphia 76ers team is spacing. The spacing that this team has this season is so different. It's so unique to Philadelphia over the last few seasons. And I'm not sitting here and saying that, you know, what the Sixers have done is revolutionary, because the Sixers have a formula so far that has worked. And the formula that so far has worked is transition, get out in space, run the floor, bend dribble drive, or maxi dribble drive, Thibel to a lesser extent, but a little bit yesterday more so than the other games. But it's guard dribble drive, kick out to the open shot. And then I'm going to take a phrase from Brett Brown. They do still utilize this. The Sixers have been tremendous in good to great opportunities. And Brett Brown was adamant about good to great opportunities. And what he meant by that was Tobias Harris might have a good shot opportunity in the corner. Ben dribble drive. They collapse. The defense collapses. Tobias Harris's man kicks into the paint because Ben demands the double team when he gets into the paint. Kick it out to Tobias Harris, he's got a good shot opportunity. But if Tobias Harris can then swing it out to the wing to an awaiting now Seth Curry, that could be a great shot opportunity. And it doesn't take a math expert to know that higher percentage shots have a higher percentage chance of going in. But what the Sixers have done with their spacing over the course of the first six games, probably, again, sans the Cleveland game, because that was just a mess and a total disaster. And I think it's just one that, as Sixers fans, we can just scrap up as a bad game without Joel Embiid. But what they've done with their spacing has created opportunities and has created open three-point shots. And it's why the Sixers knocked down, I'm going to go try to find this number real quick, but it's why the Sixers knocked down a majority of their open three-point opportunities from last night's game in the game against Toronto, and quite honestly, throughout the entirety of the season. Yesterday, the Sixers, as a team, were 16 of 35 from beyond the arc. They shot 46% from beyond the arc. They shot almost 60% from the field. That's not going to happen every single night. You're not going to get Tobias Harris 9 of 14, Ben Simmons 6 of 9, Danny Green 4 of 7, Seth Curry 8 of 11, Shake Milton 7 of 13, Tyrese Maxey 50% of his shots. Joel Embiid, you probably will get 7 of 11 from every night. And in fact, Joel Embiid, this may have been, offensively speaking, Joel Embiid's most pedestrian game. Because what Joel Embiid did yesterday was create opportunities off the rebound. He had 14 rebounds, 11 defensive rebounds. I thought that he was a menace in the paint yesterday against a Charlotte team that is undersized. I mean, it's fair to say Bismack Biyombo's not stopping Joel Embiid. And whomever else they decided to play at the center position and kind of pick and choose. PJ Washington played big a little bit. They went with a smaller lineup where I think McDaniels got a little bit of run. Martin got a little bit of run. Obviously, Miles Bridges plays big, but you know they don't have the lineup to match up with Joel Embiid. So this is the kind of game that I expected. But pedestrian-wise in terms of points for Joel Embiid, he only had 19 points, but he was 7 of 11 shooting. What I'm trying to get at with all of this long-winded soliloquy here is that the Sixers' spacing has opened up efficiency. It's not going to happen every night because, like I said, you're not going to hit 47% of your shots every night from beyond the arc. That's not a sustainable number. There's going to be a night, probably soon, where the Sixers are 5 of 20 from deep. And you go, okay, well, it's time to correct and change the offense for tonight's game and get back at it tomorrow. Because you know that Doc Rivers' biggest saying is, or biggest thing so far, is he doesn't care how it happens. He just wants wins. You heard him say it about Ben Simmons the other day when he was talking about it. Should Ben Simmons shoot more? You heard him talking about it with Tobias Harris after the first two games where he really struggled from the field. And Doc Rivers basically said, I don't care how it happens. As long as we win, you're not going to ask questions. We will. Connor Thomas and I will, because it's our job. And fans will. And you'll call in at 610-632-0975 and talk about why Tobias Harris struggled through the first two games. Talk about why Tobias Harris has been particularly sharp through the last two games. Talk about should Ben Simmons shoot or not. Does Joel Embiid take too many threes or not? You know, the endless stories go on and on. But what Doc Rivers says is, as long as this team wins, I'm good. So for me, spacing and efficiency have been key through the first six games. 610-632-0975. What is the biggest difference about this Philadelphia 76ers team through the first six games compared to a season ago? Connor Thomas, first off, good morning.
Morning, Doc.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
A little bit early today.
Just a little.
You and I usually, when you and I are together, usually it's at night. So it's a little bit different. But I'm glad to be working with you.
Yeah, same here, man.
So, opening question for you. Over the first six games, and I know that you have probably tweeted out at some point over the first six games that the Sixers are never going to lose a game again.
I don't know that I've done that yet this year.
It's coming.
It's coming.
You know
for
it
sure.
is. You know it's coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over the first six games, what has been the biggest difference maker for you when it comes to this Philadelphia 76ers team, specifically in regards to comparing them to last year's team?
So you nailed it with spacing, but I mean, I can't agree with you totally. What kind of radio would that be? And who would I? We don't agree. Come on. We're not here to agree.
Yeah, we can't do that 15 minutes into the show. Come on.
Me and Tyler Zuller are not here to agree if you listened to us before. But you're right. Spacing has been huge for this team. But spacing isn't the end-all, be-all. it's spacing and being able to make those shots when you get it. Like the Rockets of recently, the Mike D'Antoni Rockets, have always had good spacing. But when you get in a game where you shoot like 2 for 27 from three or whatever it was, when they got absolutely run out of the building in a game 7 against Golden State, like the spacing doesn't matter unless those shots go down. So getting players in this offseason who can make those open shots is the biggest difference. Like last year, who could you go to for a three-point shot? Shake, Furkan, and those are guys who were like, Shake was young. He was getting his first NBA action last year. He's coming to his own this year. Furkan doesn't really create his own shot. He's getting a little bit better. But those are guys that in the playoffs are not getting consistent threes off. You look at this team now. You legitimately have five NBA caliber, well, higher than NBA average three-point shooters that you can go to knock down those shots in Seth Curry, Danny Green, Shake Milton, Furkan Korkmaz when he's healthy, and now Tobias Harris, too, who has seemingly gone through a resurgence. If these past two games are closer to what Norm's going to be than the first couple games, he's shot the lights out. You look at that, and the spacing is absolutely important. You're 100% correct. Everything you said is right. That's huge for this team. But being able to, and I go back to the game against the Raptors, when Joel Embiid gets the ball in the post, and he passes it out to Seth Curry at the top of the key, with nobody within 15 feet of him. There aren't many guys over the past, I don't even know how many years you want to say, decade maybe for the Sixers, that knocked down that open shot that we're sure of at the end of the game. J.J. Redick, that might be the list. Marco Bellinelli, maybe. The ability to go to a guy who's going to consistently knock down three-point shots at the end of games in Seth Curry, and the ability to surround that guy also with other willing and able three-point shooters that are going to shoot in the low 40%. I mean, it's a huge difference to this team, and I'm piggybacking off of your spacing because you're right. But again, we can't totally agree. The ability to space and also knock down those shots, It gives you the ability to blow out teams. It gives Joel Embiid the ability to work inside. It allows Ben Simmons to be non-existent some games, which is still a problem with the team. But it covers up all of that by making those shots. And it's the first year in a while that the Sixers have been in the modern era with the NBA.
I think that that's fair. The one thing that I will kind of expound on a little bit is you talked about the guys that were maybe not shot creators. I don't think that's necessarily what we're looking for, is shot creation. I think you're looking for shot making for a lot of these guys, because you mentioned Bellinelli, and Ilyasova was in that same conversation. And J.J. Redick, he was a shot creator because he was able to... I've never seen a shooter contort his body in a way where he was able to come around pin downs and off screens and make shots that you go, what are you doing? Oh, okay. You know what I mean? You know that? You
no,
know exactly
you're absolutely
what shot
right.
I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about, I think that more so the other guys that you mentioned, the Bellinellis, and of course you throw Ilyasova in that mix as well, because I call that iteration of the Sixers the mercenary Sixers, because that's what they were. They were basically guys that were, you know, they were guys that were waiver wire trades and pickups and trade deadline acquisitions to get shooting for a team that desperately needed shooting. But you're correct in the sentiment that I don't know if they were shot creators. They were shot makers. I think that Seth Curry is a shot creator.
Absolutely.
I'm not so sold that Danny Green is a shot creator. Last night he was efficient. And by the way, he went over his point total over in the first quarter, because he was 3 of 3 from beyond the arc in the first quarter, or 3 of 4, I guess. But I'm not so sure that he's a shot creator, but I am sure that he is somebody that when you have to have that scenario, like you mentioned, whether it's Ben Simmons dribble drive kick out or Joel Embiid, maybe not low block, but middle of the paint to high block, catch, face the basket, turn back around, has to kick it to the open man because he's been hedged and they double him, you have to assume that the guy that you're going to kick it to the open man, he's not going to hit the shot every time, but you need 40% from all of them. And I think that you can get 40%. In fact, I know that you can get 40% from Danny Green. I think that you can get 40%, or excuse me, from Seth Curry. I know that you can get 40% from Seth Curry.
You'll get 45% from Steph Curry.
I think that...
Seth Curry. I've done that so many times this year.
You'd probably get 45% from Steph Curry, too.
Both Currys. Yeah. Del Curry.
It wouldn't surprise me. He was a good shooter, too. I think that you would get 40% from Danny Green. I think you're going to get close to that from Tobias Harris. All of that to say, like you said, Connor, when you have that either back to the basket Joel Embiid play or Ben Simmons dribble drive kick out to the open wing shot, you have multitude of guys that you are semi to totally confident in are going to shoot at a high percentage. Shake Milton is another one. It's not to say that this is a perfect offensive scheme. Because, like you said, spacing only works if you're efficient. You go back to that Rockets game. You know what's amazing about that Rockets game, Connor? They only lost that game by 9, which is amazing to me. They were 7 of 44 from beyond the arc. That's 16%. And I know that they had games that they were worse. But that Golden State game was the one that you brought up. That was game 7. They only lost that game by 9 points.
Well, they do have a guy out there that's a pretty good scorer in the basketball regardless.
Sure is. You know what's even funnier about that game? At the end of the half, at halftime, they were up 54-43. They were up 11 at half, shooting 15% from beyond the arc.
But that's what spacing does, and that's why you were absolutely right, is it not only creates those opportunities outside, it does create opportunities inside. And that's a Rockets team that was playing like stretch forwards at the 5. Like, this is a team with a bona fide, potentially an MVP candidate at center. I would argue the best center in basketball right now, and if you disagree with that, you definitely have to give them top 3. Like, this team is scary good when they're able to score the basketball from long range, and they look like they have that ability.
610-632-0975. I think Connor's right. I mean, I don't know how you sustain it for the long run every night. I think it's sustainable throughout the course of the season. But it's good. There are going to be games, and I just need people to be aware of it, that there are going to be games that the Sixers lose, much like the Rockets lose, much like you go to the college game. Villanova basketball was that way for a really long time, where it was, you know, launching threes. And you live and die by the three-pointer, and it happens sometimes. The Sixers are going to lose games over the stretch. I would not be even surprised if they lose a game, let's say maybe this week, to a team that they are superior to, whether it be Charlotte on Monday or Washington on Wednesday. Now, I don't know if they're superior to Brooklyn, but they go to Brooklyn on Thursday. They have Denver, also a good team, on Saturday. And then they go to Atlanta, a place that they have struggled consistently with. Don't be shocked if they lose one of those games because the Sixers are 5 of 20 from beyond the arc. It's just going to happen. You're not going to have the hot hand every single game. But as Connor pointed out, and we've been talking about through the first 23 minutes of the show, something is different. 610-632-0975. On the other side, we will get to some Eagles conversation as well. Excuse me, as my voice totally cracks. We'll get to some Eagles conversation as well, because it is the finale of the 2020-2021 season. And we have to discuss the college football playoff, because I am not happy with college football. 610-632-0975. He's Connor Thomas. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you until 8 o'clock right here on 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5
The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
6:30 here on 97.5 Fanatic. Thank you so much for joining us today. Connor Thomas producing the show. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you until 8 a.m. Got a good lineup for you today. D-Line and Joe Torti come your way at 9 o'clock. Rob Motti will take you from 1 to 5. Then it's the Fanatic pregame show. 5 till kickoff. And then Joe Stazak will take you postgame from 11:30 till 1. You can get your final Eagles regular season conversation out of the way with Joe at 11:30 at the end of the game. But we take you until 8 o'clock here, 610-632-0975. And before we get into some Eagles conversation and college football as well, I have to admit that I was shocked. So during the break, Connor Thomas and I were scrolling through some different NBA stats because we were talking about, we've talked about efficiency. And when we were talking about efficiency, the only efficiency we were discussing was offensive efficiency. And the fact that the Sixers have shot really well over the course of the last two games has allowed them to jump out to leads and really not relinquish them. But we didn't touch on defensive efficiency yet. And I know that if you guys know me, I'm not somebody that is take one stat and run with it and use it to my narrative, because I just don't, I don't think that that's fair to a player positively or negatively. So I'm not going to just use this one stat as the end-all, be-all for this one particular player. But the one thing that Connor Thomas and I were discussing, and we will get into it a little bit during the show, is when it comes to the Sixers defensively, specifically when there are games that the teams that they are playing, and this is going to happen, it's not a coincidence, the teams that they are playing are going to be the good teams. I mean, it doesn't, again, it's not like that's some kind of crazy thought that I've just pondered for the first time and spoke into existence. The good teams have multiple good scorers. It just is what it is. And unless the scorer is a center, such as the Denver Nuggets that they'll play next Saturday, you have to determine which Sixers guard slash wing is going to match up with the other team's guard slash wing, the scoring guard, and determine how you're going to play your defense as such. When you have the center, it's obvious. Nikola Jokic comes to town next Saturday. You know who his defensive assignment is. It's Joel Embiid, and it's Dwight Howard when Joel Embiid's off the floor. And you feel at least moderately comfortable with both of them. And I say moderately comfortable for Dwight Howard. You feel, I think, supremely comfortable because Dwight Howard, or excuse me, Joel Embiid is the best center in basketball, and I don't believe that it's up for debate at this point. But you feel comfortable with those guys. When it comes to wing scoring and guard scoring, the Sixers have had an issue with that throughout the course of the last 3 years. And that hasn't changed entirely because Ben Simmons can only guard one player at one time. Ben Simmons has put RJ Barrett on lockdown. Ben Simmons put the scoring tandem of Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, did pretty good job on them. Trying to think of who else he has shut down entirely. I mean, he didn't play LaMelo Ball, entirely yesterday, but I thought LaMelo Ball looked rattled. But the point is, Ben Simmons can only guard one man. And when you have a team like the Brooklyn Nets, who the Sixers will face on Thursday, who have multiple legit scorers, you have to decide what situation is best for the Sixers when it comes to defending said multiple legit scorers. So the conversation becomes, does Ben Simmons defend the other point guard on the floor in Kyrie Irving and hope to neutralize Kyrie Irving to the point where he becomes inefficient? Or do you put Ben Simmons on the best scoring player on the floor for the Brooklyn Nets in Kevin Durant? And then you have to live with the conversation of, the other one is probably going to score quite a bit. They're going to get theirs. That conversation is one that we're going to have throughout the next 2 hours. But what I wanted to say with all of that, and again, I go back to, I don't believe in having one stat be the defining number for one particular player, because that is just squeezing a player into a particular sports narrative that I don't like to buy. But I will say this, through six games, when it comes to defensive win shares, the third best defensive win share in the NBA, and the only one of a player that has played in every game this season, belongs to Tobias Harris. And you could say, Tyler, well, what does defensive win share have to do with the play on the floor? Yeah, it is a computer-generated number. I get that. And again, it's not the end-all, be-all of defensive stats or stats in general. But Tobias Harris having a .199 defensive win share, the same exact defensive win share as one Joel Embiid, by the way, who is in fourth, and the other two guys are slightly better, and they've only played two games. So all of that to say, I think that Tobias Harris has been better defensively than we expected him to be. Does that make you comfortable enough to put him on a Kevin Durant, to put him on some other top flight wing scorers? Because when it comes to defensive setup, it would help the Sixers tremendously if he could defend other big threes and fours. 610-632-0975. Connor Thomas, I'm going to get your answer to that question in just a second, but let's go to the phones and we'll talk to Tasty Cake Dom next on the Fanatic. What's up, Dom?
Hey, Tyler. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. I really enjoy you and Connor. I just was talking to Connor.
Sure.
Here's the point. So I think one of the things that the Sixers do so well, if you're going to beat the 76ers this year, you better shoot 50% from the floor because you don't get no second shots.
It's
the
true.
Way they hit the glass is unbelievable. It's one and done. And then they start their transition down the other floor. But that's a way they can win where they're not scoring 73 points in the first half.
Yeah, I think that's true. You're going to have to limit opportunities. And like you said, there is a decision made by the Sixers team. I mean, they average almost 48 rebounds a game. Obviously, Joel Embiid has a bulk of those at almost 13 a game, but Ben Simmons averaging almost 10, Tobias Harris 8.5, Dwight Howard almost 5 in limited time. I mean, Tony Bradley only has played in one game so far, but he had 8 in the one game that he played in 17 minutes. They are a team that they're not massive. This isn't bully ball like it was last year, but they do a great job of, like you said, cleaning up the glass and not allowing second chance opportunities.
I have been so impressed with them this year. It's unbelievable. And they have had halves, like against the first half against Toronto, they couldn't throw a rock in the Grand Canyon. I mean, you know, and they hung in there. And then the second half, they limited the Raptors to 30% shooting. It was unbelievable, their defensive effort.
Yeah, and Dom, I said earlier in the show that I don't want to get too excited because of the fact that, A, it's six games and the Sixers were in this exact same spot record-wise a season ago at 5-1, and B, some of the teams that they've played, you know, even with Orlando and with Orlando and Cleveland having 4 wins in their first 6 games, it's not been a world-class schedule to start the year, but the things that I've seen that are different from this Sixers team, and like you said, cleaning up the glass, spacing, efficiency, the ability to hold on to leads, and even after the opposing team makes a run, getting that lead right back, all of those things didn't happen last year. So that is why, even though it's only 6 games, I am more excited than I was at 5-0 this time last year.
Yeah, and when we talk next Sunday, Tyler, they will have played the Nets, and they will have played Denver, right?
Yes.
By next Sunday morning, they'll have had a couple of tests. The Nets game is coming off of back-to-back. So you think against Washington Wednesday they sit Joe?
Well, that was something that Connor and I were talking about. I think that while I'd love to see him play, I think that they probably do because they want to get him. They're going to need him for Brooklyn and need him for Denver.
Yeah, so that's an interesting test as well to see if Ben Simmons now responds to the challenge of beating a team that's not doing well without Joel Embiid on the floor.
Yeah, Dom, thank you so much for starting us off. Always great to talk to you. 610-632-0975. He's correct. You are going to have to get, because you saw it in the Cleveland game. They were outclassed by a Cleveland team that is inferior to them talent-wise. So when Joel Embiid is off the floor, how do you make that work? Because making it work with just Dwight Howard and just Tony Bradley is not sufficient. And that is not a knock on either of those two guys. It is just the reality of the situation is that when Joel Embiid is off the floor, the Sixers are a sub-500 team throughout his career. I think they were 44 and 55 in the games that he's missed. You know, not in the games that, like, he was on the roster, but he was hurt in the beginning of his career. I'm talking about since he has consistently played. They're a sub-500 team when Joel Embiid is off the floor. It's not a coincidence. He's the best player on the team. He's the best center in basketball. He's the top 10 player in the NBA. So it's not a coincidence. They do, however, have to figure out how they're going to play without him because, yeah, he probably doesn't play on Wednesday. I'm trying to just look ahead to some of the games that he may not play. Saturday, January 23rd, coming off a back-to-back, they play the Celtics at home on Friday night, and then they go to Detroit to play the Pistons for two. I would imagine that on Saturday, January 23rd, he doesn't play. Dwight Howard gets the start. Talking about Wednesday, February 3rd, they have a back-to-back in Charlotte, and then they play home against Portland. You're going to want him to play against Hassan Whiteside in Portland, so he's probably not going to play against Charlotte. I mean, you're talking about two games. It's only two games, and there's probably going to be a couple more sprinkled in throughout the season, but those are just two that I'm able to find off the top of my head. You have to find a way to win those games, because not only will the common theme be Joel Embiid is off the floor, but the common theme will also be those are two inferior teams to the 76ers. So you have to find a way to win those games without Joel Embiid on the floor. Those are the games that you have to count on, because right after that Detroit series, who comes to town? The reigning NBA champions, LA Lakers. Right after the Washington game that he's going to sit out, that we presume he's going to sit out, it's Brooklyn, Denver, at Atlanta, and then two with the Miami Heat. You have to find a way to win those games.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. Like, every game that Joel Embiid sits out, in theory, barring injury or anything, will be against a team that's inferior to the Sixers. That's the idea, is you're finding spots in the schedule where you're playing a back-to-back or you're playing a long stretch of games every other night, and you get a team you think you can handle, so you get Joel Embiid some rest. A lot of teams do it. It's not just the Sixers. It's not just Joel Embiid. You've seen it already this year in a short season, six games in for some teams. But you saw what happened against Cleveland. You saw what happened against Toronto when Joel Embiid went to the locker room with the issue with his knee or back or whatever it ended up being. And he, of course, he returned to that game and he's fine. When he is out, this team is a different team. But I will say, since he left the game and then returned against Toronto, this team has seemed different even with him on the floor. The rest of the team has played significantly better. So I'm very interested to see when he sits out. This week will be hugely telling for the Sixers. They're in a great position right now. They're number one in the NBA in terms of record, tied with the Phoenix Suns at 5-1, the only two NBA teams at 5-1. But this is going to be the week where we get a true look at what the Sixers are going to be. Not only because I agree with you, Tyler, I think Joel Embiid sits against Washington getting ready for Brooklyn and Denver later this week, but you get your first taste of two teams that really are conference final contenders in Denver and in Brooklyn. And this is where you're really going to see, can the Sixers compete with those teams that they're going to have to run through to win the Eastern Conference? It's a huge week, but it's awesome to look at it and say that the Sixers have a really good chance about just anybody you run out there on the floor against them.
Yeah, I think that that's fair to say. I mean, looking at the upcoming schedule, it is a daunting week with Brooklyn and Denver looming. But beyond that, I mean, take a look through the end of January. Now, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Things happen. Injuries happen. Poor play happens.
You want to do an Eastern Conference Finals preview?
No.
Let's go.
No, that's not quite where I'm
Sixers,
getting
Brooklyn.
At.
Let's go.
But looking at the course of the remainder of the January schedule, they play again, you know, Charlotte again, Washington again. They're at Atlanta. They are at Memphis with what I would assume is probably still no Ja Morant. They play at Oklahoma City. They have two in Detroit. They are at Minnesota. and they wrap up the month on a Sunday at Indiana. Those are all teams. And now I'm going to get to the teams that are also included in that list. But those are all teams that, in my estimation, the Sixers are definitively better than. Definitively better than. Then you get to Brooklyn and Denver, Miami twice, Boston twice, the Lakers. So that's seven games over the course of the next 27 days. Well, 28 days. That the Sixers are not definitively better than. I'm not saying they can't win the game, because I think that just about every game is winnable for the Sixers, with the exception of maybe the Lakers. But who knows? Maybe that's the kind of game that Ben and Joe step up because they want the spotlight. But I'm looking at eight games, or eight teams, I should say, that are the Sixers are definitively better than. And then you've got Brooklyn, Denver, two with Miami, two with Boston, and the Lakers. And those are teams that are definitely equal to, and some better than. The Lakers are better than the Sixers. I think that Brooklyn is probably talent-wise better than the Sixers. And then Denver is comparable, Miami's comparable, Boston's comparable. You're going to see what kind of team the Sixers are over the next 27 days. Twofold. Can they beat the bad teams? Because they struggled to do it over the last three seasons. And how do they perform against the good teams? So let me ask you this. It's a hypothetical, but I think it's important. What is more telling to you about this Sixers team over the course of the next 27 days specifically? Is it more telling to you, Connor, that the Sixers do their jobs and beat the bad teams, the Charlottes, the Washingtons, Atlanta, Memphis, Oklahoma City, Detroit, Minnesota? Is it more telling to you that they just take care of business and beat those teams? Or is it more telling to you if the Sixers not only compete, but win games against Brooklyn, Denver, Boston, Miami, the Lakers?
Obviously, it would be ideal to see them do both, but if you're making me choose, I'd rather see them take care of business against the bad teams. I mean, you've seen games already this year in this NBA with the shortened offseason and the shortened preseason training camp, a lot of moving pieces that haven't worked with each other across the league. There have been games, the Sixers losing to Cleveland, the Nets losing to Charlotte, the Bucks losing to the Knicks hugely. I mean, there are games where bad teams beat good teams. It happens every night in the NBA, or just about every night. So if the Sixers can take care of business over the course of a month against teams that are inferior to them, that says a lot more to me. I don't need to see them beat Brooklyn on Thursday. I don't need to see them beat like the Heat back-to-back games in that home-and-home they have. I need to see them just go out, handle the teams that they're supposed to handle, win the games of the regular season. We know it's a playoff league. It's getting in the playoffs. It's getting a top four seed and going, and they can do that without beating those other teams. I want to see them compete, but I'm not losing my mind if they lose to a Brooklyn. I'm not losing my mind if they lose to the Lakers. If they go out and they get their show run by the Minnesota Timberwolves, then we have an issue. So if I'm picking between the two of those options, take care of business with the teams you're supposed to beat, because that's been an Achilles heel of the Sixers over the past. It's almost like they've had like four legs because they've had so many Achilles heels. But one of them has been the inability to put away bad teams, and to show they can do that this year would be a huge step.
Well, and specifically too, by the way, Connor, the inability to put away teams where?
On the road.
On the road. Exactly. Now, you are fortunate to have Charlotte and Washington at home over the next 4 days, well, 3 days actually. But you have to go to Atlanta next week. You have to go to Memphis next week. You play a back-to-back. Found another back-to-back, though. I guess I must have missed this one. Probably would expect Joel Embiid to play on Saturday against Memphis. That's two Saturdays from now, not the next one coming up. I would expect him to play against Memphis because they want him against Jaren Jackson, and probably would sit against Oklahoma City. But you have to go to Memphis. You have to go to Oklahoma City. You've got two in Detroit. You go to Minnesota. You go to Indiana. And then just to begin the month, you go to Charlotte.
Let me ask you something real quick. Just pick your brain real quick because I know we're coming up to a break. How do you feel about the new home-and-home NBA like mini series that they're doing this year? Do you think those games are going to be split because it's hard to beat an NBA team twice?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of parity in those games because, like you just said, it is very difficult to beat the same team twice within the span of what's probably most of the time is 3 days. It's game off game, but sometimes it will be back-to-back. I think it's very difficult to beat teams on consecutive nights or on consecutive games during the regular season. I think that you will see it happen in the playoffs because there are not eight playoff caliber teams most of the time, in the East at least. But I think that for the sake of the regular season, because you are going to get teams playing the same team back to back in the same building, you're going to see guys have days off for load management. You're going to just see, like, let's assume that they played Charlotte again. But I don't even have to assume. They do play Charlotte on Monday. So I don't have to assume. You might see the Hornets beat the Sixers on Monday because of the fact that the Sixers may not shoot the ball well. It's what we talked about at the beginning of the show. Maybe Charlotte wins that game because the Sixers just aren't as efficient on Monday night as they were on last night. I don't think they will, but it's possible.
You know, it's kind of interesting because you mentioned it. The playoffs, you play the same team, of course, up to seven times in a row. It's almost, so there are going to be losses because of this setup, because of the home day off, another home game against the same team, where you're going to lose to inferior teams for the simple fact of the league evens out. But I think we may, this is just the theory I'm throwing out here, we may get a better idea of what teams are built for the playoffs by looking at these home and home against other playoff contenders, where before it was just one game, one instance, you don't know, someone gets hot. When you play Miami on one night off, play them again at the Wells Fargo Center. When you play a Boston night off, play them again the next night. You're going to get a much clearer view of how these Sixers will stack up in a playoff series if they're built for playoff basketball. I think that could be beneficial for us judging how this team's going to be in the long run.
I think that it could be beneficial. The worry that I have is if you're going to play that on like the flip side. Whereas, yes, you will get battle tested by playing the same team twice. It will be more like the playoffs. The worry that I have is that when it, not necessarily in January, it doesn't really impact, excuse me, too much in January, but come late February, get into March, when the second half of the season gets announced, the worry that I have is February 21st, February 23rd, just to use that as an example. The Sixers go to Toronto for back-to-back nights. You lose both games. It's not necessarily I go, okay, they're not playoff ready. It's necessarily the fact that you just lost two games in the standings to a divisional rival and a team that you assume is probably going to be a playoff team. Losing two games in three nights is harder in the playoff picture than it is to me in a small scale sample size. So yes, I think that it is fair to say that you could get an idea of what is to come, but I also would be worried about the flip side of that, which is losing what would I guess would be four games in the standings, right? Because that would be how the standings would work. If you lose to Toronto and they are directly below you or above you, you lose two games. Do that twice, you'd lose four games over the span of 3 days. That's going to be difficult. That is why it is imperative to at least split these back-to-backs. And I think you're going to see it happen a lot. 610-632-0975. We haven't talked to the Eagles today. It's been mostly Sixers conversation. We'll do that a little bit on the other side. And I also do need to throw at you this college football conversation because I know that it's been an hour, and that is probably the longest stretch of time that Connor Thomas and I have been on the air together that we've not argued about something. So I think that it's time that we break that trend.
Here we go. round starting after this break.
We'll discuss that on the other side. 610-632-0975. He is Connor Thomas. I'm Tyler Zuli. We take you until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.